In our tradition in Plum Village, we call this practice looking deeply. And one of the reasons we like to say looking deeply instead of thinking deeply or something like that is because it involves more than just your thoughts. It involves the way that you think, right? And it takes being centered, being at home within yourself in order to practice looking deeply well. If you're not really there, your thoughts are going to be bouncing around with some amount of random association. But if you're there and you're able to exercise that little bit of freedom, you'll be able to choose where your attention rests, with which thought, for how long, right? And you develop that capacity slowly, over time, little by little by little by little, retraining your mind in how it operates. I read something by Eckhart Tolle once where he said, I think he had asked the participants in one of his seminars a question, and he said something like, how many of you can just stop thinking right now? And no one raised their hand. And he said, yeah, it's not so easy, is it, just to stop thinking? What does that tell you about who's thinking? Right? Because if you were doing the thinking, you'd be able to stop it. Right? You should be able to turn it off if it's you thinking. So what he said is basically the thoughts are thinking themselves around in circles here and there and associating, and you're just running along behind. Right? So we can change that relationship with mindfulness by bringing yourself there and saying, okay, I'm going to think this. And one of the best ways that I've learned how to do that is to incorporate other sensations into this, to allow the thought to take shape within me as a feeling, as a resonance, to let it sit, to rest there. You know, this is essentially contemplative meditation, right? To allow a particular thought to stay there and to hold it there and to really feel it, to experience it. May I borrow this? So here's an exercise we can do together. Do you know the name of this flower? Forget it. You don't know the name of this flower. You know the name of a species that's classified somewhere in botany class and dictionary, etc. You don't know the name of this flower, right? You can't pronounce the name of this flower. That's not to say that you can't use it, the thought, right? But let that thought bring you to this flower, in your relationship to this flower right now, so that you can experience this flower, so you can become it and know it, right? This is how we develop a thinking that's really relevant and not just operating in the conceptual realm, but it has to do with reality. It has to do with things that are here. So we can just look at that flower and we form some thoughts about it and we say, okay, I'm going to hold that thought. Right? You grab on the thought you want. So let's say, for example, you start with just observation of the color. And you're going to use the thought about the color, like perhaps the gold color of the petals. But looking at the petals and bringing that thought of the gold color of the petal in, feel the gold color within you. Because this is not an imagination. You actually know what it's like to feel gold. You've got gold color in you. Yeah. Look at the shape, the curve, and the quality of the curves and the sort of the gesture of the petals. And with the gold and the shape, let that sit in your mind as you breathe in and out one time. The awareness of the gold and the shape of that. So you can feel, you become like that little blossom. And then you can ask a question once you've established a kind of basic awareness of the object of your meditation. You can ask a question like, what are you made of? Now, this is a question designed specifically for meditation. What are you made of? To help us discover something about the object of our meditation, in this case, this forsythia. Yeah. So it invites us to look with particular eyes. And we could call these eyes the eyes of interbeing, right? Because what we're going to discover is that there are so many things that make up this flower. And so I'm giving you the answer already. There are so many things that make up this flower. We're going to find that this flower is the interbeing nature of this flower. Right? So you look at the flower and you establish a relationship to it. Basically, you say, what, dear flower, are you made of? And when I see the gold, immediately makes me think of sun, right? There's a little random association, right? Acknowledged. Use it, right? So you say, okay, there's sun. I know there's sun in the flower. This I learned, right? Somewhere. Someone told me, or something like that. There's sun in the flower. So staying with the flower, the sunshine is in the flower, hold that thought. Feel that thought with one, two, or three breaths. The sunshine in the flower that you can now see and picture and hold inside yourself, its color and its shape, its sunshine. And the magic of this is sun's light has come and touched all the petals of this flower, of this plant. And this plant has absorbed energy from the sun. The sun's light has become this flower, right? And when we breathe this in and we stay with it and we feel that sun in the forsythia, you can feel the sunshine in the forsythia. And you know why? Because you have also absorbed the sun. This isn't an imagination. You know exactly what it's like to be sunshine. Yeah. Maybe not in exactly the same way as the forsythia until now, right? But now you know. You have sun within you too. You know what it's like to be the sunshine. It's not just like a cartoon you're playing out in your head or something like that. It can be very real. And you can do that with the earth too. You know that this plant has drawn minerals. I can see that within myself, like the plant would, drawn out through the roots and the soil into the plant to assimilate minerals into its body to help it grow into the shape and the structure and the various densities of its tissues, you know, and its fibers. I can feel that, what that's like, and I have those same minerals in me. I know what it's like to be made of the earth. I am made of the earth too, right? This is a way of retraining our thinking. Slowly, breath by breath, thought by thought, you take a hold of it and look carefully, asking this question, what are you made of? Now, if your mind spins off and starts running, you know, fine, that's fine. But when you notice you've run, for however long you've run, go, wait a minute. Let me come back. Let me use those thoughts, some of those thoughts in my train of running, let me use them to come back, Bring it back. Reestablish yourself in that contemplation. So looking into the flower in that way with that question, what are you made of? We can discover the flower's interbeing nature with the earth, with the sun, with someone who kindly went out with a pair of scissors and clipped it from the branch this evening. And we can see them in here and their love of sangha and practice. All those things are present in the flower. And all those things we can find in ourself. All right? We establish ourselves in direct relationship with this forsythia and all that this forsythia is, not just with the species of forsythia. Right? Mm. And that's an exercise we can do. To look at a flower, to look at a stone, to look at a cat, to look at whatever. And to rehearse ways of thinking that will bring us closer to life and not away from it. Closer to the actuality of what's there and not further from it. There are other exercises we can do too with very similar questions. Ones that are very fun to do with people. And the same thing is true. You can use that very question with someone, especially it's good to contemplate people who you spend a lot of time with in your life. It's good to contemplate them this way. And one of the reasons is because it helps you to experience them as they truly are, right? Not through your ideas, your prejudices, your past experiences of them, your expectations of them, your hopes for them in the future, you know, not through any of that, but to experience them as they are and to be able to live deeply with them here and now, right? And to treasure them and to find the full meaning in your life together rather than in your fears and your worry about what might happen or your fears about getting into situations that you had in the past, you know, which is a difficult way to live with someone, to live out of fear or to live close by to someone, you know, to fear what might happen or what has happened. Right? But to look deeply in order to discover more of who they truly are and not limit yourself to just the ideas you have based on certain experiences you had, because there's always so much more. So there's another set of questions you can use. The one about what are you made of is one sort of in the realm of space, right? But you can go more specifically to time. And to the quality of impermanence. All things are of the nature of interbeing. All things are also of the nature of impermanence. They never stay the same in one moment to the next. They are always in a process of being born and dying. Right? All things. You know, we think we're alive here, but we're also dead here. You know, how many cells on our body right now are dead? Yeah, a few hundred thousand. You know, right here, and dying, and others being born. You know, there's a tremendous process. How many stories in our emotions and in our consciousness are being born and dying, and what else are we made of? Right, everything is in that process all the time. It's impermanent. Impermanence, Thay likes to say. Thay Thich Nhat Hanh likes to say, impermanence is life. Right, it's not something to think about. It's something to be and experience. Impermanence is life. And one way to ask another simple question like that is, where have you come from? Or, where are you going? You know, and that sort of puts us into the frame of looking deeply through time. And so if you ask that question of a person, that's quite lovely. Where have you come from? Where have you come from? Right, and so the typical way we answer that, right, is with like this... the city of our birth, or our mother and father, right, and things like that. No, and that's all true to some extent, but it's just a tiny little piece of the story. By contemplating the impermanence of things, you can go back generations and generations and generations and connect with this incredible stream of manifestation, which has somehow become this person in front of you, or yourself, right? My mother and my father are in me. I can't be in front of you without them. Right? You can't take your mother and father out of you. You wouldn't be there. It's like trying to take the sun out of the flower. It won't be there. Right? It's so clear. It's so clear. Mom and dad are there. And through them, grandparents. But not only that, like generations of society and education and all those sorts of things have been printed on down the line until it manifests as me or as you or as the person you're contemplating. And so instead of seeing this person who's this name, who's this old, who has these problems that I don't like and has these wonderful qualities that I absolutely adore, you know, instead of just those things, they become this marvelous manifestation of all of life. So many generations of ancestors generations of wisdom, generations of hardship, generations of striving, of loving kindness, of all kinds of things manifesting in this being in front of you. And where are you going? You can see the continuation too. Especially if someone has children and grandchildren, etc. You can see a continuation as people, you know, genetically. But you can also see someone's continuation through the very thoughts and feelings that they've carried through their lives. You know, like you all tonight and me, you know, we're not separate anymore. We're sharing in space, in breath. I am you. And my words and the meaning that I convey and the way that you interpret it, all that, this is a transformation and a continuation of something marvelous. So I could say after tonight that I can see my continuation. I'm sure I could find it somewhere in each of you. And tomorrow I'll be able to see it in Anna, because we'll be talking about things as we're driving to Charlotte. And but there's every day of our life, who we are is manifesting, is revealing the world, right? And it's impermanent, it's moving, and it's growing. So when something's moving and changing all the time, it's pretty hard to hold on to. In fact, it's pointless to hold on to. And yet we do that all the time. We grab on to people, we grab on to places, we grab on to experiences, and we say, this is me, this is you. I want you like this. Stay like this forever. But it's impossible. They've already changed. Right? And we'll change more and more and more. Birth is like that. Death is like that. It's a magical transformation. Sometimes rapid, sometimes slow. But it's just a transformation and continuation. When I look at the people that I have loved, cool, got it. When I look at the people that I have, this Dharma talk is impermanent. The people that I have loved who have passed away in my life, it's tempting, because I've been conditioned to think, oh, they're gone, and to miss them. What I miss is not them. What I miss is my idea about them, right? And my idea about what that does or is for me. You know, even people very dear, and even in very challenging situations of people who have lost their lives prematurely, like my brother-in-law, who was murdered last spring in El Salvador at the age of 37. You know, someone like that, who I want to mourn for all the things he could have done, or all the things that I wish I could have done, etc. And these are a lot of ideas and things that I'm holding on to, when in fact, who he truly is already moved on before he got murdered. You know? He's already continued in so many ways. I just am not looking at them, because I'm stuck on the sign of, you know, him and the situation that he was caught in. Something about that makes me suffer a lot if I hold on. And there's something deeply liberating about looking deeply in order to discover who he truly is and continues to be in the world. Right? And I can find that very easily, especially in his son. You know, when I look at him, when I see all that he is, and I contemplate, and I talk with him about his dad, we find that, at least I do, he's still struggling with this, but that he really is continuing. And to begin to let go of my idea that he exists only in that body for that amount of time. He never did. He was always part of this amazing transformation and continuation. And there's so much glory and freedom in that. And we are all like that. We are all like that. Yeah. Yes, I am Michael Szaborski, and I am so old, and I live in such a place, and I have certain credential and accomplishment and failures and sufferings, right? That you can define me as in a particular story. And that might help us to navigate through the world. But the moment it stops helping, let it go. Let it go and find out something closer to the truth. Because we are also so much more than that. So much more than that. Unfathomably, indescribably beautiful and immense. Yeah. All from one in-breath back home. All starts there, an out-breath. Aware of my body, aware of my feelings, aware of my thoughts. Come to that center, still point, and there meet the world. Meet the world. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Action.